The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network. Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
The Stanley Cup Final is two games in, and already it's a classic series, Drew. The Edmonton Oilers won Game 1. It went to overtime. Game 2 went to double overtime. Florida got the win. Are we going to have a triple overtime game in Game 3 when the series shifts to Florida?
Well, there's no reason to think it's not going to go into overtime again, right? These two teams are so evenly matched. Both teams going back to Florida or going to Florida now for Games 3 and 4. Both teams must be thinking, we could be up 2-0. It's been as tight and as tough checking and as hard-nosed and grinding playoff series that we've seen this year, entirely 100% entertaining.
Well, it certainly has been. And I really just think that the quality of hockey, to me, has just been fabulous in both ends. You've got great goaltending on both sides for the most part. You've got unsung heroes coming through. What's been your biggest story?
Biggest story for me is how the Edmonton Oilers have changed their game and learned from last year to this year that you have to check to win hockey games. You have to be able to play throughout the whole 200 feet away from the puck, more hard-nosed, like the Florida Panthers. They're more like the Florida Panthers than they were trying to be the high-flying Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl-led team that flies up and down the ice and scores off the rush. To me, the biggest change is they are grinding away. From the Florida side, Danny, I look at that team and I think they just don't quit. They just keep going. Think about how many games of hockey they have played now in the last three seasons. And they don't waver. They have a belief system that you can tell when they play that it just runs deep throughout that team.
Well, it does. And of course, the addition of Brad Marchand hasn't exactly hurt either. He's just brought everything that he has as a player and as a person into that locker room, and he's integrated really seamlessly.
He really has. I was reading reports on him today, and Paul Maurice said that, and so did Nate Schmidt, so did Matthew Tkachuk. I was going to say Keith for a second, that how he has just come into the Florida Panthers, a guy who is notoriously throughout the league known as the most agitating person to play against, yet he is just one of the most positive guys, gregarious, high-fiving everybody at the games, at team meals. He's just fit in seamlessly there. But he's also, let me ask you this, when it comes to Marchand, and there's some other players in the league, do you believe in the clutch gene?
I do, and I think basically what I'm saying is that these guys are really at their best when it's time to come through in the clutch. Corey Perry's another one. I mean, game two, a couple seconds left in the game. He's 40 years old, and he does that.
Yep. He's got nine goals now?
It's incredible, isn't it?
Incredible how good he is playing. They've been always, who are we going to put with McDavid? Who are we going to put with McDavid? They've been wondering about who to put with McDavid for 10 years now. Corey Perry's the guy. It's amazing that certain guys, when the pressure's on, that's when they are at their best.
Well, this is something I'm noticing also about Edmonton. Chris Knobloch hasn't necessarily had to go to what they call the nuclear option as much. That is to put Leon and Connor out there at the same time. He does it every once in a while, usually in the second period when he wants to change momentum a little bit, especially since Edmonton has struggled a little bit in the second long change period. But other than that, I mean, he's been able to roll four lines, and that's new.
That's a great point, and that's very different. It's very different from that team because they always had to rely on Connor and Leon. Every coach that comes into that team, from Todd McLellan to Ken Hitchcock to Dave Tippett, even Knobloch, we're going to keep them apart. We're going to separate. We want to have depth throughout our lines. And then, well, you end up going back to the nuclear option, as you say, because those two are so dynamic together. Went back to it in the third period when the game was tight. But overall, he's been able, because of Corey Perry and because of the play of Evander Kane and Matthias Janmark, they've been able to have a very good second line, the Edmonton Oilers. But when you look at this series, what is really striking to me is for the Florida Panthers, they never get rattled. They never get out of sorts. They got scored on 17.9 seconds left yesterday's game by Corey Perry. And Paul Maurice said after the game, he said, we were fine. Matthew Tkachuk said, yeah, we were picking guy who's the guy who was going to score. We were jammed up. We were ready to go, and we were excited about it. So it's a very strong mental makeup as well as a physical makeup of that team.
What about the Sam Bennett factor too?
Oh my gosh. Hey, he is, to me, fantastic. He knows how he has to play, knows he's going to take a ton of abuse. He's going to give a ton back. He is a guy that is not afraid to do the, dirty's not the right word, but get to the tough areas, willing to take abuse to help his team. And he gives it back without a doubt. No problem there. I love Sam Bennett. I know he's a free agent, and I don't think the Sharks are there yet where they would go out and grab a guy like Sam Bennett. But when you watch Sam Bennett play, I don't think he wants to go anywhere else. Exactly. Yesterday was really interesting. He took that penalty on. He gets bumped by, I think it was Ekholm in the crease, and falls on Skinner. Skinner tries to sell it, and the whole turn twists his knee up, and they go down. Skinner's fine. Played great. Bennett takes a bunch of abuse. And then he goes to the penalty box. Then Tkachuk goes to the penalty box as well. Tkachuk gets into the penalty box and gives him a big pat on the chest. You know, way to go. That's another player recognizing that, yeah, he's doing what he's doing for us. He's doing for trying to help us win. And people in Canada, Danny, you should hear the roars of negativity towards Bennett, because they remember this series against Toronto Maple Leafs where it wasn't a big elbow. It was he brushed by Stolarz with the elbow, and Stolarz was out after that for the rest of the series. But it was the slap shot in the face that hit him in the first period that caused Stolarz all the problems. And we remember we talked about that. And now he's running to Skinner in game one. That was a goal. They thought it was goalie interference. It wasn't goalie interference. And now he bangs into him again. So we're going to be really interested to watch the handshake line after this and see Bennett and Skinner talk to each other about the series.
Well, if Bennett and Marchand can become loving teammates, given their rivalry when they played against each other, I suppose anything can happen. Of course, related to what you're talking about too, Drew, is they weren't complaining about Bennett when he wore a Calgary sweater north of the border. Although they did complain about the fact that he didn't score enough big goals there. And, oh, it's good that he got traded for this big deal. And as it's turned out, he's been an amazing thing. But this is all bringing up an interesting point that I keep hearing during the regular season, and when I hear about it in the regular season, it's totally different than in the playoffs. And I heard him talking about it on network radio and television. I've heard him talk about it, in comments. And that is the ability to take advantage of a situation. You know, Bennett was tripped up by Kulak on that one play.
Right.
And he kind of fell into the goalie, and everybody was praising him about how he used the situation to take the goalie out of the game and have it work out and all that. And I'm thinking, wait a second. Isn't that what they call embellishment in the regular season? Shouldn't he get a penalty for that?
Exactly. That's been the other interesting thing, hasn't it? It always happens. How the game's been called. The referees, for the most part, have tried to stay out of the way. And I'm kind of from the Ron Wilson school, Danny, where it was a penalty in December in the first period. It can be a penalty in June in the third period. But that's not the way the NHL works. And I'm not complaining. That's just the way it is. That's something you have to adapt to. But I was listening to Bill Lindsay, former San Jose Shark and now color commentator for the Florida Panthers. Went to the Stanley Cup Finals with Florida when they first made it against Colorado way back when. But Billy said, the one thing about the Florida Panthers is that they don't get caught up in all of that. It's very interesting that he said they really work on the controllables. They don't worry about the uncontrollables. And how many times have we talked about that with the San Jose Sharks this season? And they started to get much, much better at it, San Jose. They stopped complaining to the refs as the season went on. They did a very good job of backing away from that. And the Florida Panthers, from a player point of view, besides the normal chirping at the referee after you take a penalty, they don't get all caught up in the calls that are being made and the calls that aren't being made. And so that's something that, as a experienced playoff team and a bunch of experienced veteran guys, it doesn't affect them at all, and helps, you know, project them or move them forward.
Well, let's get to a highlight from game number one, and that was Sam Bennett, who scored a really, really big goal for Florida to give the Panthers at the time a 3-1 lead.
Here in the near corner, it's Sam Bennett. Backhand, couldn't clear. Here on the near boards, Trent Frederick works down to the corner for Edmonton. He's knocked up. The puck, Henrique sends it around far side. Klingberg couldn't hold on to it. The Panthers bring it out for Hagee. Advances one, Schmidt across to an open man. And first shot, Bennett, and he scores! And the Panthers take a 3-1 lead. Sam Bennett buries it 2 minutes into the second, and the Panthers lead by a pair.
Carter Verhaeghe again, a big part of that. Nate Schmidt having a good playoff, but Sam Bennett with his second goal, making it a 3-1 lead. And yet Victor Arvidsson came up and scored a huge goal. Then Mattias Ekholm tied the game with his first of the playoffs. And that set things up for, I guess you could say, one of the heroes of the Edmonton Oilers. And that, of course, would be Leon Draisaitl to come up in OT. But before that, there was a pretty big save that was made by Sergei Bobrovsky when it was 3-3.
Bennett through the neutral zone, peels off far boards, backhand over the Edmonton line, taken back by Klingberg, pass straight on, the Oilers will counter. Kapanen gets by the knee, cuts in, Kapanen, shot, a save made by Bobrovsky, kicked that away, looked like he got the left pad on it. We play on, we've gone 7 minutes and change here in this overtime frame.
They stayed even at that point. That's Doug Plagans with the call. And then, of course, it came down to, as I said, the hero, Leon.
Turn back to McDavid. Against Marchand, uses a screen. McDavid dishing off. Nugent Hopkins waits and bumps it back for Bouchard. Nugent Hopkins on the left half-boards, under pressure. Turns and gives it up. Beautiful pass. McDavid in front. One time, score! Leon Draisaitl! 4-3! Edmonton in overtime.
Jack Michaels with the call right there, as you can expect in that lengthy overtime delivery that he's so famous for. And Edmonton takes the 1-0 lead, and everybody's celebrating. Everybody thinks the Oilers are going to waltz their way to the Stanley Cup playoffs in 4 games and win that coveted cup for the first time in Canada since 1993. Of course, everything changed in game two, didn't it, Drew?
It certainly did. On that overtime winner in game one, that was the Oilers won a power play late in the period, the first overtime, because of the worst rule in sports, which is the puck over glass rule. And
awful.
And terrible. And I'm surprised, you know, that Dan, that NHL general manager, they haven't had more discussion about that, but we never hear about it being talked about from the general manager's meetings when they come back from wherever they meet during the season. So I guess it's not an issue for the GMs as much as it is for some of us in the broadcast booth. But Corey Perry with a heck of a pass to Connor McDavid. The Connor McDavid's play to Leon Draisaitl was fantastic. But you're right. Everybody was talking after that game. 4 straight. They're just too much. The Oilers are on a roll. And coming home to Canada. And I told people, I said, you know, the cup actually does reside in Canada. It just summers somewhere else because it gets to go on trips during the summer. But that's the big thing here, Danny, is that in Canada, bring the cup home, bring the cup home. Not quite understanding that it's probably one of the dumber narratives in sports, because the cup comes home to Canada every single year because Canadians are on every single team. But anyway, I digress. I apologize.
Well, no, don't apologize. That reminds me of something else that's been going around lately, of course, and at the State of the Union message that Gary Bettman gave, he got a lot of questions about the issue of no income tax states and what's going to be done in the new collective bargaining agreement to deal with this so-called issue. And obviously, it is an advantage for some teams, but you remember when Florida was in last place, nobody wanted to go there and play, and so the income tax issue wasn't as much of a factor. But the one thing that everybody seems to indicate is players take less to play in a certain state because they have no income tax. My comment is no. They don't take less. They just keep more.
100%. That's exactly right. They don't take less. No player has taken less money to go play somewhere else when it comes to the income tax situation. And if that was the case, then how come the Edmonton Oilers for the last 2 years have been able to stack the team like they've been able to and get to the Stanley Cup Finals? Players are going to certain areas now because they want to win, period. Players are alpha dogs. Yeah, the salary means a lot, but you and I have been around this game for a long, long time. Players don't play for the salary. That's the great bonus of it. They play because they want to win hockey games and they want to win Stanley Cups. They've been thinking that way ever since they were little kids. Like when when Macklin or Will, when they get their new contracts, you think they're going to be excited about the dollars, or are they going to be excited about being on a team that's growing and building together and going to have a chance to be back to being a great team in the league?
Related to that, don't you think that prospective unrestricted free agents aren't going to think the same thing about wanting to come to San Jose and play with these guys?
No kidding. And California's got one of the toughest taxes, state taxes throughout the National Hockey League. It's about winning. It's about a chance to be excited, about a chance to play on a team that you've got some juice and there's something exciting happening and you can be part of it. That's going to be what the San Jose Sharks are about. That's what the Florida Panthers have been about. And the Florida Panthers have had to restock. And that's what the Edmonton Oilers have been about. That's what the top teams have been about, being able to be part of a championship team, because we know your name gets on that cup, it's there forever.
One guy who might get his name on the Stanley Cup as an Edmonton Oiler is Jake Walman, who was traded there by the Sharks as we got to the deadline. He's played very, very well for this team. And his coach, Chris Knobloch, talked about how important he's actually been to the success of the Oilers.
I'm pretty sure we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Jake, among others. But Jake's game was tremendous, especially, missing Ekholm. You know, we needed guys to step up in Ekholm's absence. He was one of those guys. And when we got Jake, we wanted a guy who's a puck-moving defenseman, some agility, give us a little more scoring. And yes, he gave us all that. But one thing I didn't know about Jake was how many block shots he had. In the first game he played with us, he had about 5 or 6. And throughout the playoffs last night, I know he had about 3 or 4. And, he's willing to put his body in front of the puck and make it hard for them to score. He's also physical. He had some big hits last night. Nice surprise. We knew we were getting a smart, good skating defenseman, some offensive flair. Guy can probably be on the first unit power play if we needed that. But I didn't understand or knew about his all-around game, and his defensive play has been really well. And he's also been used in many situations. You know, he's been on the penalty kill, and at the trade deadline, we wanted players with versatility. You know, we talked about Trent Frederick playing numerous positions. Jake Walman, same position. Like, he's played with every single other defenseman. He's been on the left side. He's been on the right side. And right now, he's been playing a lot with Klingberg, which I think those two have been great together. But get back to your answer. You know, his role on this run has been very important.
That's right after game one, Chris Knobloch talking about Jake Walman. And none of that surprises us, Drew, from what we saw. I'm really happy for Jake because he didn't always get the credit that he deserved, I didn't think, until he really came to San Jose as to what he could do. And in fact, you can hear it from his coach that he was surprised about some of the things he's been able to do.
Yeah, Chris just should have called you or me, and we could have told him all of that, because that's what we saw from Jake. And Chris Knobloch's right, but you are as well. It's no surprise to us. Jake is a heck of a player, a very wonderful pickup by Mike Greer. And wanted to stay in San Jose, but boy, he also got a chance. I talked to him after he got traded. He got a chance to go to a team to win the cup. And you think about where he was from Detroit to where he is now. But Mike Greer turns and gets, for future considerations, gets a number one first round draft pick. That's great job by Mike, but also great for Jake Walman. And you brought up something, Danny, I think it was during the trade, when we did the trade day thing with Ted Ramey, that, you know, players looking at where Mike Greer has been trading people. He trades them to teams who are going to have a chance to win in the playoffs. And that resonates across the league with other players when, as you said, when eventually the Sharks start going after free agents, they're looking at going, well, listen, their GM, he's a stand-up guy, man. He treats his players right. So, yeah, I might want to go play for Mike Greer and the San Jose Sharks. So that goes a long way with the NHL players' currency, without a doubt.
It does. And of course, the Sharks have kind of had a tradition of doing that over the years. Think about Jeff Friesen ending up going to, a couple of times he went to Anaheim, then he ended up going to New Jersey and playing so well and winning a Stanley Cup. It's happened a number of times over the course of history. But under Mike Greer, most particularly, he's got a reputation for being exceedingly fair to players. I talked to Mackenzie Blackwood, who just heaped praise on Mike Greer for that very thing. And that's a good sign for the Sharks for the future.
Yeah, it really is. And so you look at Jake and how well Jake's played. Obviously, it was a great pickup for the Sharks and a really good pickup and needed for the Edmonton Oilers. Sharks get a first rounder. But again, like you said, when it comes to Jake, it's not a surprise to us. We saw him put in some heavy minutes with the Sharks this season.
Well, Walman had a really good chance in game number two. It didn't go in, but it was an opportunity.
Walman all of a sudden breaks free. Slap shot, and that got through Bobrovsky, but he got it with the heel of his glove and sent it tumbling wide, and then Klingberg got knocked off the puck. Lundell trying to force the issue.
Once again, that third D pair so-called for Edmonton coming up huge. That's Walman firing it to the goal. And again, so close, but yet so far. That's that gets back to the goaltending between these two players. Sergei Bobrovsky on one side, the two-time Vezina Trophy winner, and obviously a Stanley Cup champion. And on the other side, Stuart Skinner, who's continuing his strong play.
I'm going to tell a quick story first about before we talk about the goalies. When I was on the bench during the broadcast, when Jake would get off a big slap shot, he'd come back to the bench. He'd always ask me, how fast was that? Because, you know, it's tracked now.
Right, right.
That one particular, I remember that slap shot because it comes up on the screen. That one was 95.6 miles an hour. So he rocked that one. But he always wanted to get one up around 100. He'd ask every single time. So that's just a little cute story about Jake. When you look at the goaltenders, The very interesting part of this equation on goaltenders is Bobrovsky's Bobrovsky, and he is a champion and an outstanding goaltender. Stuart Skinner, remember, after the first two games against the Los Angeles Kings way back in round one, was pulled for Calvin Pickard. Pickard comes in, Pickard gets hurt, Skinner comes back in, and Skinner has been nearly unbeatable since then. Very strong mentally, able to bounce back. But it's also an indication of the team got smarter in front of him playing the way he had to play. But Skinner's made some humongous saves. You have to, right? In order to get this far, you got to make some big saves. He has been like he was last year, and like he had up and down season this year, and up and down season last year. When the heat was on, like it is now in the finals, he's been great.
To a degree, he's a modern-day Martin Jones in that factor. I remember in 2019, last time that the Sharks made the playoffs, he didn't have a great regular season up and down. And then in the playoffs, he was outstanding.
Yeah, that's a great point. I never thought about that. Was it game six against, I can't remember who it was against for Martin Jones, that he had kind of struggled in the game before and stayed out. I remember you told me the story. He had stayed out early. He came out early, and usually you don't. Yeah, goalies didn't come out early, but he came out early, stayed out late, which goalies who are starting in the NHL don't do, because in the playoffs, you've got to get your rest, and then worked and worked and worked, and then had a great, I want to say it was against, I can't remember. But anyway.
It happened a couple of times, actually. He came out for game number five in Pittsburgh, and he hadn't been very good. That was back in 2016, and he was the best player on the ice. But the same thing happened in the St. Louis series, too, when they went to round three. He was in a situation where the Sharks needed a win, and he got one.
That was it. It was the St. Louis game. Because remember, you and I talked about it, and I remember you told me about that when I was watching from afar, and I was amazed at his game. And Stuart Skinner has done the same thing. Stuart Skinner just stays with it. He has belief in himself. And really, sometimes that's the only belief you need.
Well, here, since we're on the topic of goaltending, let's go to Paul Maurice after game two. Talking about that topic, he was asked the question about Bobrovsky making a couple of big saves in overtime, how that really has helped the confidence of the team and so forth. And here's what he said.
I don't think that we talk about the two goalies enough in this series, right? Like, there were some good saves made at both ends, high-end saves. I mean, there's some world-class shooters here, and there's some stuff that just doesn't quite go in, but you watch that tight on video tomorrow, you're going, oh, that was a hell of a save. Like, that's the changer. Both goalies have been outstanding in this series. I mean, we're playing, what do we got, 4-3 game, 5-4 game, and both teams are playing well defensively. That's how good the offense is. And then with that, I almost leave the bench thinking this thing could be 8-7 and you could still be happy with your game and great goaltending. So the goalies have been really good.
Well, it was made possible, of course, because Corey Perry scored a goal for Edmonton with just seconds remaining in the third period. He doesn't care as long as they go in. And of course, here's how it sounded on the Edmonton side.
McDavid and Perry trying to bust inside the circle. The puck is finally dropped. It rolls loose. McDavid kept it alive. Bouchard under pressure. Got it through Mikkola. Down low in the corner. Panthers can't clear. Wallman shot. Save. Bobrovsky. Rebound. Score. Corey Perry has tied the game. 18 seconds to go. And we are tied.
I mean, just an exact jubilation on the Edmonton side of things. And of course, it went down into overtime. And what do you expect? A single overtime period, a lot of great chances. And in overtime, it came down to the Florida Panthers getting the victory. Let us use the Edmonton call for that.
Now Perry looking for the game winner. Gives it up for Leon Draisaitl. Shadowed by Forsling. One-timer at Ekholm, and he missed the net high glove.
Uh-oh.
And now here come the Panthers. Lundell to Marchand. A breakaway. Marchand denied. Score! It slithers through the legs of Skinner, who made the initial save, and Marchand able to poke it home.
That was a big, big play by Marchand. And, of course, Ekholm just misses before that. But let's not forget about Sam Reinhart's opportunity in a breakaway, too, in that game that Skinner was able to stop.
Well, on that play, Skinner, Marchand denied. He wasn't denied. He wasn't denied at all. The key play on that is Marchand fights off the check from Draisaitl coming back on that and is able to get his stick free and poke it between the legs of Stuart Skinner. It was a terrific play by Brad.
Let's talk about these two vets, Corey Perry, Brad Marchand, a couple of oldsters by NHL standards, just coming up so huge. Paul Maurice talked about both of them.
Well, I think we're coming into an age of that. These men now that have come into the league probably post-2000, after that, the fitness level, the sports science that goes into it is just completely different than when I started. So you're going to see two things that have changed. 2006, the rules changed so younger skilled players could play early, and the science that's changed over the last 20 years will allow these players to recover faster. You know what, and a credit to the owners in the National Hockey League, the amount of money that's put into teams, and I've been very fortunate with the owners of the teams they have. They have a tremendous amount of care for the players, whether that's the meals that they eat, how we travel. There's a lot of money that goes into allowing these players to play. So the old guys and the young guys benefit from the rule change, and they're better fit conditioned athletes over their entire lives.
Can't forget about the contribution of the ownership to make this league better. And that's a huge, huge comment by Paul Maurice. The players become more committed to their own bodies as their years go on. And we're getting better hockey out of it. And it's going to be one of the reasons why this is going to be a classic series.
Yeah. Great point, Danny. I think that's really well brought up by, Bright Paul Maurice. I'm glad you put that clip in because there is an investment from everybody. And if you're wondering why their owners get their name on the cup, that's one of the reasons why, is all the revenue they put in. And again, the San Jose Sharks are doing that as well with what they've done to increase their sports performance with Mike Potenza heading up that crew. There's a lot of work that goes into making sure the athletes are as in peak physical condition and as healthy as they can be when this season, which is a long season and even longer playoffs, it seems sometimes, gets into the mid-June before you're able to win to award a Stanley Cup. A lot of work goes in from everybody. But also, you're right. People, the players are in much better shape now. They take care. It's an investment in their careers that they have to stay in shape.
Well, the fans are in shape for sure. The quality of hockey is spectacular. And, Drew, we've had a one overtime game in game one, a double overtime game in game two. And we know that we'll be right there for you, too, on the Stanley Cup Playoff Report.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.